He backed away from the pod, noting the half-apprehensive faces of the first rank of Marines. God, they look young. I hope to hell they took my warning seriously. He checked his own skull helmet and took a deep breath. Okay, Cathal. Switch it off. The blackness vanished from the pod, revealing the smooth cylindrical composite sarcophagus. Ralph strained to hear the manic battering which Skibber had been giving the pod before the Zero Tower silenced him. The compartment was quiet apart from the occasional scuffling of the Marines as they craned for a glimpse. Open the lid. It began to slide back. Ralph braced himself for Skibbo to burst out of the opening like a runaway combat wasp with a 40G drive. He heard a wretched whimpering sound. Cathal gave him a puzzled glance. God, did we get the right pod? All right, stay back, Ralph said. You two, he indicated the Marines with the carbines. Cover me. He pulled himself cautiously across the grid towards the pod, still expecting Skibbo to spring up. The whimpering grew louder, interspersed with low groans. Very, very carefully, Ralph eased himself up the side of the pod and peeked in, ready to duck down fast. Gerald Skibbo was floating listlessly inside the curving, cream-white composite coffin. His whole body was trembling. He clutched his shattered hand to his chest. Both eyes were red-rimmed. Blood was still oozing from his mashed nose. The smell of jungle mud and urine clogged in Ralph's nose. Gerald continued his weak gurglings, bubbles of saliva forming at the corner of his mouth. When Ralph maneuvered himself right over the pod, there was no reaction from the unfocused eyes. Shit! What's happened? Admiral Farker datavised. I don't know, sir. It's Skibbo, all right, but it looks like he's gone into some kind of shock. He waved a hand in front of the colonist's filthy, bloody face. He's virtually catatonic. Is he still dangerous, do you think? I don't see how he could be unless he recovers. All right, Hilch. Have the Marines take him down to the isolation area as quickly as possible. I'll have an emergency medical team there by the time you arrive. Yes, sir. Ralph pushed himself away, allowing three Marines to pull the still unresisting Skibbo from the zero-tile pod. His neural nanonics informed him the asteroid was being stood down to Code 6 status. I don't understand, he thought bleakly. We brought a walking nuke on board and wind up with a pants-wetting vegetable. Something wiped that sequestration from him. What? The Marine squad departed the compartment noisily, joking and catcalling. Relieved they hadn't been needed after all. With one hand holding idly onto a girder, Ralph hung between the two decking grids long after the last of them left, staring at the zero-tau pod. 3 hours after Guiana's alert status was reduced to Code 6, life in sight had almost returned to normal. Civilians with jobs in the military-run cabin were allowed to resume their duties. Restrictions on communication and travel were lifted from the other two caverns. Spaceships were permitted to dock and depart, although the spaceport where the Equon was berthed was still off-limits to anything but Navy ships. 3.5 hours after the Marines delivered a virtually comatose Gerald Skibbo to the isolation cell, Captain Farah Montgomery walked into the small office Time Universe maintained on Guiana and handed over Graham Nicholson's fleck. It was an hour after the maids had served Cricklade's breakfast, and Duke was already rising across a sky that was ribbed with slender bands of flimsy cloud. Duchess Knight had seen the first sprinkling of rain since the midsummer conjunction. The fields and forests glimmered and shone under their glassy coating of water. Aboriginal flowers, reduced to wizened brown coronets after discharging their seeds, turned to a pulpy mess and started to rot away. Best of all, the dust had gone from the air. Cricklade's estate labourers had started their morning in a cheerful mood at the omen. Rain this early meant the second crop of cereals should produce a good heavy harvest. Dewey's Kavanagh didn't care about the rain, nor the prospect of an impending agricultural bounty. Not even Genevieve's playful enthusiasm could summon her for their usual stroll in the paddock. Instead, she sat on the toilet in her private bathroom, with her panties round her ankles and her head in her hands. Her long hair hung lankly, tasseled ends brushing her shiny blue shoes.